Todd Young comes out against Trump. Suzanne Crouch picks up a pair of congressional endorsements, plus rainwater for governor again, and more. From the television studios at WFYI, it's Indiana Week in Review for the week ending May 12th, 2023.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
This week, Indiana Republican U.S. Senator Todd Young said he will not support former President Donald Trump for the Republican nomination for president in 2024. Trump appeared on a CNN town hall Wednesday and pushed back against the idea that Russian President Vladimir Putin is a war criminal while saying that ending Russia's aggression against Ukraine isn't about winning and losing. U.S. Senator Todd Young the next day criticized those comments, saying Putin and his government have engaged in war crimes. And Young told CNN Trump's remarks are a reason he won't support the former president for the GOP nomination.
And what was the reason for not supporting him?
Where do I begin?
Young reportedly sidestepped questions about whether he'd support Trump if the former president is the Republican nominee for president next year. Are you surprised at Young's comments? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanes, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, editor-in-chief of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House Bureau Chief Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, if Trump is the nominee, which at this point seems like the likeliest of scenarios, will Young change his tune?
I hope not. I mean, I think it took some courage for him to stand up and say, you know, recognize the fact that the guy is a pathological liar and that he thinks that making friends with our enemies of our country so we can have business deals is okay. I mean, he is so divisive, so much a threat to our democracy that I think Young and I hope other thinking Republicans will stand up and say he's not only bad for our party, which he's demonstrated, but he's bad for our country. And we've had enough. 4 years, actually, it's now been how long has he been on the scene? It is part of the reason that this country is so polarized, because there is no truth, there is no science, there's no nothing. He lives in a never-never land where he makes up whatever he wants to say. And I think Young is right to do what he did. I hope he would stick to his guns if he's the nominee. And I wish more Republicans with backbone would stand up and do the same.
I think the initial comments that most of us saw that Young made were centered on Trump's remarks about Putin, and I'm not surprised at all that Todd Young pushed back on that. He's done things like that even while Trump was president, quite frankly. But then the other comments we saw, you know, the idea that Todd Young was reported to have said, as President Trump says, I prefer winners, and Donald Trump loses.
Shortest
path to losing. Not only does he lose, but he makes other people lose. Are you surprised at how far he went?
I am surprised by how far he went. I'm not surprised by what he said, because I think we've seen that Todd Young has been willing to, even when Trump was president, he was willing to be against him. He was vocal about being against him in a thoughtful way, explaining why he was against him. But also, you know, sometimes he had to kind of go along or maybe not speak up as much as, you know, maybe felt like he wanted to. That's clearly changing. I don't think it's going to be unique to Todd Young. And this is why. I mean, can you imagine Ronald Reagan standing in front of the wall and instead of saying, tear down this wall, he said, I don't really care if the wall's there or not. I just want the Cold War to be done, and I don't really care who wins or loses.
Because it's not about winning and losing.
It's not really about winning and losing. And that's on, for some reason, I was in a dark place on Wednesday. So I actually watched it until that part. And then we can't do this again. We barely survived the first time.
Yeah.
We can't do it a second time. And this is why. The moral authority of the United States, in a lot of places, China and Taiwan, Russia and Ukraine, these despots and these tyrannical leaders feel like the moral authority of the United States really no longer applies. And that's true when you have a president that doesn't have any real moral compass of his own.
If Donald Trump does become the nominee, however, does this
I got a lot to walk back.
Yeah. Apart from Mike O'Brien, does Todd Young, is Todd Young in a rough spot?
If he is, good for him. I mean, have we
deteriorated as a political system to the point that not being in lockstep with the party's titular leader is somehow a death knell. I mean, think how far we have come, and I don't mean that in a good way, how far we have fallen. There used to be vigorous debate when members of a party would take a president from their own party to task and actually disagree on occasion. And maybe you're right. This is about, you know, let me count the ways, or where do I begin in terms of not wanting to support him. So you could argue that takes it a step further. But my goodness, we've become so sensitive to the notion that anybody who says that he or she doesn't like the way that Donald Trump
parts his
if that's hair, that's somehow bad. It's not going to hurt Todd Young. I mean, the political question for me is, would he have said this before November of 2022 when he just won another six-year term? And being in the first year of another six-year term has a way to embolden one, sort of like taking a shot of whiskey.
Yeah, this was exceptional even for Donald Trump. I mean, there's not a lot of on-par comments.
Right, right. And keep in mind, Todd Young,
especially from Todd Young. I mean, this is also, I think, surprising a little bit because Todd Young isn't usually this guy who makes.
I also meant Donald Trump's comments. I mean, there haven't even been this level, maybe around January 6th, but like. Things that were so relevant to the presidency and the United States position in the world, then even
Todd
for
Young
him,
is. I mean, he is more practical. Has been. Look at his co-authorship of the CHIPS Act with Senator
Chuck
Schumer.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some things he puts, I think, ahead. Maybe a lot of things he puts ahead of just partisan
maybe
politics.
Maybe he puts the country
and
ahead,
it's a reminder of the way we used to have our television.
Well, I do want to point out one thing, and other than the Putin comment. The additional comments he made were all about winning and losing. They weren't a character or an integrity-based, opinion. It was flat out, we'll lose if he's our nominee.
Todd Young was running the National Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee in 2020. So he saw firsthand the impact that Donald Trump had on
and by the way, races. People who are concerned about how this will impact him. Remember, Todd Young was one of only four Senate GOP incumbents who won last year without Donald Trump's endorsement. Yep. So he's pushed back against him for several years. This was just the
more
biggest
power to him.
Definitely went further this time
yes.
than he had before. Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question. And this week's question is, are you surprised Senator Todd Young won't back Donald Trump for the GOP nomination for president? A, yes, or B, no. Last week we asked you who you think will win the 2024 race for governor. 42% say the Republican candidate, 49% say the Democrat, and 9% say the Libertarian candidate. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch, speaking of the governor's race, earned a pair of high-profile endorsements for her bid this week, Republican Congressman Greg Pence and Larry Bouchon. Greg Pence, the brother of former Vice President and Governor Mike Pence, called Suzanne Crouch a proven conservative who will support families, faith, and life. Larry Bouchon, who served in Congress since 2011, said Crouch inspires confidence in her ability to shape Indiana's future. Crouch is part of a hotly contested GOP primary for the open governor's seat in 2024, facing U.S. Senator Mike Braun and Fort Wayne businessman Eric Doden. Mike O'Brien, this is shaping up to be an expensive primary. Mike Braun has a lot of money. Eric Doden has a lot of money. Suzanne Crouch so far has a lot of money. Do endorsements like these, though, help give Crouch, who maybe doesn't have quite the financial advantage, theoretically, that the other two do because they can self-fund a lot, do endorsements like these help give Crouch a boost that she needs?
Absolutely, especially in a primary. I think they matter probably less. Well, certainly the partisan ones matter less in a general election, but in a primary, county organizations still matter, county parties still matter, a congressman's network still matters. You do try to go collect those, especially well-regarded and well-connected and well-organized other elected officials in your party to back you up, because it gives you a volunteer base, it could give you a fundraising base, it all adds together, right? And this is, you don't win or lose on a member of Congress endorsing you, but you win or lose on your ability to build an organization from kind of the ground up in a primary, especially because you can't just you could we're going to find out if you can go buy a primary, but we have no experience in Indiana, really, like other states. Yeah. We'll have three candidates and go spend $8, $10, $12 million. I mean, we haven't had a $30 million
I hope you primary. Spend it all.
We will.
How much, to basically the same question, how much do, you know, I think I was just, in my head, I was just doing the math here. I'm reasonably confident Larry Bouchon is the most senior Republican member of Congress in this state. There's been a lot of turnover over the last decade, and he is the most senior Republican member of Congress in Indiana. Does something like this matter?
And what has he passed? No. All right. It matters. It matters. It matters. And it matters, actually, because they're part of the same congressional delegation that Mike Braun is, and yet they've separated themselves from him and from his base in southern Indiana as well. You know, so
true.
That is
Mike Braun's district.
That right there. So that tells you something about the way they feel about Mike Braun. And certainly that helps her. Is it enough? Who knows? But it certainly doesn't hurt her, and it certainly doesn't help Mike Braun.
Now, we saw the last really, one of the last really hotly contested primaries in Republican primaries in Indiana was the 2012 Lugar-Murdoch campaign. And there was a lot of people who afterwards, even a little bit at the time, said, boy, Murdoch really burned a lot of bridges in the primary by going after Lugar that did not help
and
him
after
when
it.
And after it that it did not help him and
yeah.
did not help him when he needed help late in that campaign.
Well, neither did his mouth.
Well, but he got himself into trouble and then didn't have really a lot of folks to go to say, can you help me out? So
I don't know how you help on that.
on something like this, how do you walk the line between I'm backing this person, but I'm trying not to burn the bridge with this other high-profile candidate?
Yeah, I mean, I think you focus on, and I take note of what Ann said, something about that. That says something about Braun. I think they will probably try to make the distinction of, we're not saying anything about Braun. We think he's a good Republican, but we support
we like
Suzanne because of these reasons. And you really try to focus on the candidate you chose and not the candidate you didn't choose.
Now, there's perhaps another thing going on here with one of these endorsements, which is there is a rumor going around, I've heard from several people, that Greg Pence is interested in the lieutenant governor slot should Suzanne Crouch be the candidate for governor. So how much do those sorts of considerations play sort of beneath the surface in endorsements like these?
I heard that rumor. In fact, I think I heard it from you yesterday. But yeah, there's a lot of intrigue because at this point, you know, if you believe the ghost of Ronald Reagan, you know, the best thing to do for Republicans is not only not to speak ill of other Republicans, but to just wait a little bit and you know, just let matters, you know, the chips fall where they may. So when there is this sort of willingness on the part of high-profile Republicans to offer an endorsement and take a stand, whether it's for or against, I guess you can infer what you want. It is important and significant, and I think that's what breeds these kinds of analyses where people are saying, I wonder if it's just that or is there something more? I don't know the answer to the question. I do agree with what has been said about, I don't think certainly endorsements are as important in the big scheme of things as they used to be, but they are still important at this stage, and I think these were particularly valuable because of that notion of federal. You would think that the delegation or people who serve in Washington would tend to sort of be in one club, if you will, and those who are in the limestone on West Washington would be in another club. And this shows that her appeal is broader than that.
If that rumor is true, this is an even better endorsement because it's not just a name on a piece of paper. He'd be out working. If he thinks he's going to be on the ticket, he's not just going to sign the paper and hit the road.
And he can explain his credentials on economic development when he went belly up with them and had us pick up the pieces.
Lobbing those softballs across the table. Now, let's stay with the governor's race. Libertarian Donald Rainwater announced recently he will make another bid for governor in 2024, which comes after a record-setting run in 2020. In a statement, Rainwater says his campaign will focus on education, tax, and administrative reform. The Libertarian says he wants to lower taxes through responsibly reducing government services, and he argues parents deserve to make the choice where their children go to school. Virtually universal school choice is already included in the new state budget.
Rainwater is looking to capitalize on the momentum of his 2020 campaign, which earned more than 11% of the gubernatorial vote. That's a record for Libertarian candidates, fueled by a weak Democratic candidate and dissatisfaction among some conservatives with Governor Eric Holcomb's COVID-19 mitigation efforts. Holcomb is term limited, meaning the 2024 governor's race will be an open one.
Nikki Kelly, can Libertarians have another performance like they had in 2020?
I think there was kind of, there were several things going on in 2020 that aren't going to be there this year, and I think that's a problem for them. The first thing was Donald Rainwater obviously captured a lot of people who were upset with the moves that Eric Holcomb was making on COVID-19. All the lockdowns, all the curbing of the freedoms and, you know, overreaching. So that is not going to be around anymore. And he can't even, you know, use it against his, whoever his, you know, opponents are. Also, you know, because of COVID-19, Eric and Woody Myers couldn't get out there and work things. And so I think we would have seen a vastly different race for those reasons. A, COVID bringing some philosophical differences out, and B, just the sheer fact that you had to do everything sitting in your house. You couldn't have rallies. You couldn't have dinners. You couldn't do any of that.
It also, I mean, 2020 also saw a really, really weak Democratic candidate for governor. That the kind of which, I mean, assuming that Jennifer McCormick is, even if she's the only one so far, she would automatically be a much stronger candidate than Woody Myers was.
I mean, he had deep pockets. He could be self-funded. But you're right. I mean, he wasn't. He turned out not to be gain the traction that.
So how much does that part of it? Was it kind of a perfect storm for them to hit this number?
I think Nikki's exactly right. There are a lot of factors involved. That was one of them. I think the pandemic, just about everything the pandemic touched, whether it was education levels or the acquisition of skills or workforce development, everything is going to always be, sadly, an asterisk next to that. And that race is going to carry an asterisk, too, I think, for that reason. I think that was a high water mark. I don't think it will be achieved again. I think there will be such an emphasis on this is such a high stakes game and so much is at stake. And I'm not suggesting for a moment that voting for a third party candidate is a waste of time or of one's right to vote. But
it is.
In all likelihood, it's
no,
not going
but
to
it, but
it's it, not
for
going
some
to prevail.
People, it's an appeal. For
it's an appeal, people, it's but, an appeal, but when the stakes are so high, I think that argues or pushes, nudges people into one camp or the other, or just to stay on the sidelines and sit on their couches.
Mm. We were talking a little earlier in the control room, quite honestly, about this, about his candidacy and the idea of third-party candidates in Indiana. And I was saying, if you could only do one thing to change voting in Indiana that would have the biggest impact, it would be to get rid of straight-ticket voting. As long as straight-ticket voting exists in Indiana, are third-party candidates at any level, at any office, naturally going to have just too big a hill to climb?
Yeah, not just for Libertarians, for independents. So when I was Hendricks County chairman, we'd have independents running because they knew they couldn't get elected as Democrats. But if you just count the straight ticket votes, you'd have to get like 90% of what's left if you're trying to win, right. And it's insurmountable. And so, but in the Republican counties, we're like, don't touch it. But in a Marion County, we want to touch it.
Yeah, right.
Right, because for the same reason.
Right.
You know, the Republican candidate for mayor is going to have to go try to capture a huge percent of a majority percent of that.
Let me ask you this question about Donald Rainwater and Libertarians. In 2020, it did seem like Donald Rainwater ate into some of Democrat Woody Myers votes Woody Myers might otherwise have gotten, votes Eric Holcomb might otherwise have gotten, and then maybe some people who might not have voted in that race before who were upset with Eric Holcomb and wanted to show their support for another candidate. This time around, with all those same conditions not existing, is it more likely that if a Libertarian does well, they bite into whoever the Republican candidate for governor is?
I think so, because if you wind up with somebody like Braun as the Republican nominee and you have an election denier who has been with Donald Trump all the way down to the point where January 6th happened, he was with him. I mean, you may have thinking Republicans who don't want to vote for a very well-qualified Democrat but can't bring themselves to vote for him. And for good reason. And same thing, you know, when abortion features in this, he's going to be in favor of the most restrictive abortion provisions as well. So there may be Republicans who just think their arms will fall off if they vote for a Democrat who would be comfortable voting for him.
Well, that happened in 30 counties where Rainwater
came in second place.
Yeah.
That's right.
In 40.
Attorney General Todd Rokita suffered a setback this week in his legal fight against social media company TikTok. An Allen County judge denied Rokita's request for a preliminary injunction, ruling the state was unlikely to succeed in its lawsuit against the platform.
The lawsuit is one of two filed by Rokita against TikTok. It alleges that TikTok is deceiving users with its rating because of videos that contain sexual, vulgar, and/or drug use content appearing on the app's For You page, or FYP. Attorneys for the state used the Apple App Store as its example. Apple's age restrictions are based on surveys ranking types of content as infrequent/mild versus frequent/intense. But in his order, Judge Craig Bobay said the ratings are subjective and cannot be used as representations of fact under Indiana's Deceptive Consumer Sales Act. Judge Bobay also questioned whether or not the court had jurisdiction over this lawsuit. The age rating is uniform across all states, not targeted at Indiana.
John Schwanis, this lawsuit, unlike so many of the things we talk about with Todd Rokita, didn't feel particularly partisan. There's a bipartisan concern about TikTok and its ties to China. But this lawsuit always felt like a bit of a Hail Mary. He was trying something, but it always felt like he'd probably have a tough time succeeding. Maybe he ultimately will, but this isn't a good sign for that. So in light of that, are you surprised that state lawmakers didn't have a go at TikTok this session?
Well, I think they already had a full plate of agenda-type message-sending bills that they were chose to spend the most of their time and energy on. We've talked about those in recent weeks. We don't need to detail them. So they made their points in terms of the overarching sort of conservative, government bad, China. They made their points in other ways. Also, to your point, it would have put them in the awkward position of being in agreement with, say, the Biden administration and many Democrats. Now, in some cases, the reasons people are attacking TikTok are different. The Biden administration is national security. Others are concerned about exposure of pornography or inappropriate content to children and so forth. But I think it's less that and more just, okay, we got 4 months. We got a few things that are going to ignite our base and energize our base. Let's just double down on those.
To that end, then, is this something we should look forward to next time?
I don't know. I feel like this topic is so much more complicated than some of these. You know, when you get into nationwide apps and geofencing and you know,
apps,
international issues, I mean, I'm not sure. I think there's only one other state that has, quote, banned TikTok altogether. And even when you do that, like, you can't take it off someone's phone. You can't, you know, it's just so much more complicated that I think Senate President Pro Tem Rod Bray, especially as a lawyer, would be a little more reticent toward wading into those very complicated legal matters.
Let me ask you this question, which is, should the state, because unlike a lot of states, again, Democrat and Republican governors, we haven't seen Eric Holcomb do much, unless I missed something. I don't think he's done much in terms of banning TikTok from government devices.
Oh, no, they are.
They are banned from government devices.
Yeah, IoT okay. did that. Yeah.
But beyond that, though, is there anything the state lawmakers, the attorney general, is there anything they should be doing?
There's nothing they can do, yeah. is the point. This is a federal communications issue, and the federal government has to deal with it, which is, of course, part of what the judge in Allen County recognized. So what if Todd Rokita bans TikTok? So what? It's the same nonsense as him on immigration and stopping immigrants at the border. He's so far outside his lane that it's ridiculous. And this is a federal issue, and the Biden administration is dealing with it, and that's the only way to deal with it.
Yeah, and is this one of those issues that the states really have to kind of leave to the federal government?
Of course, for all the reasons that he just outlined, and I think she's right. I think you've got a nation of people watching cat videos and tell them that it's bringing down Western democracy, and if that's true, it was all illusion anyway.
Yeah, that's the important thing. My wife is
golf.
It doesn't do anything for me, but a lot of people like it.
Yeah.
And why take on a lot of people who think you're just picking on their favorite app?
Yeah. All right, finally, the Republican primary for a Whiteland Town Council seat in Johnson County, Indiana, ended in a tie in the recent election. 103 votes for both the incumbent and a challenger. Now, breaking the tie is up to the county Republican Party chair. Mike, that's a job you once held, though not in Johnson County. How would you break the tie?
Well, how I did break the tie, my policy was, we're voting again, so you guys go cut a deal or figure it out. And if you don't, you can't figure it out, then I'll figure it out. And I did that once, and damn near got ran. I did it at a small town convention, which is little towns that don't have primaries. And they about ran me out of town on a
rail. So lesson learned.
Which is not near the county
chair. Hatfields ran me out because I picked the McCoys.
How would you break the tie?
I'd do it the way they did it in Pennsylvania when they had a tie for a local election. They took a Bible, and each person had a knife, and they cut through the Bible, and the page with the last digit that was the highest won.
So page 48 would win over page 102 or something like that.
Yes.
How would you break a tie in a council?
I think in the past I've always said I want an arm wrestle, but I'll stick with that one.
Well, since a duel's off the table, let's go with...
Why is a duel off the table?
Let's do it.
I'd say give them the high school civics exam or the AP and see who scores highest on that.
I'm taking that one.
Too.
I mean, the coin flip is honestly the thing that a lot of folks use, but it just feels kind of boring. I like the Bible, but I really like the civics.
What if they both fail?
In fact, why stop at ties? We could do every election that way.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. You can find Indiana Week in Review's podcast and episodes at wfyi.org/IWIR or on the PBS video app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana's public broadcasting stations.